Good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to begin today's press conference. Before we begin, I'd like to let all of you know that there will be a special Meet the Expert session that will take place here in the media room at 3 p.m. today. Christina Guzzo of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases will be here, along with a video link to Dr. Anthony Fauci from the NIAID director. They will be discussing NIAID's work on the Alpha 44, Beta 77 integrin and its implications for HIV pathogenesis. So welcome to that session if you attend, and welcome to this session today. I'm Constance Benson. I'm a professor of medicine and global public health from University of California Infectious Disease, and I'm president of the CROI Foundation that hosts CROI, and I'll be chairing our first session today on tuberculosis for the media. So today's discussions, we will start with a brief 2-minute presentation by each of our investigator authors here, and then open it up for questions for each of the presentations. And I will introduce each in order. So our first discussion today is by Dr. Timothy Rodwell. Tim is presenting a multicenter diagnostic accuracy study of the Expert Ultra for tuberculosis diagnosis. And I'll turn it over to Tim. You can each just speak from the table.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. Please. Good afternoon, everybody. The study that I presented on today at the late breaker section really has to do with it's an update of a TB diagnostic assay that already exists. So the TB Expert diagnostic assay was rolled out in 2010, mostly because of the giant diagnostic gaps in tuberculosis. Essentially, there are no good ways to quickly and accurately diagnose tuberculosis or drug-resistant tuberculosis. So in 2010, MTB RIF Expert assay was rolled out, and it has pretty much transformed TB diagnosis in terms of being able to diagnose near patients directly from sputum in a couple of hours. But it had some limitations, and the limitations were particularly important and relevant for a CROI meeting, in that it missed those patients that didn't have a lot of bacteria in their sputum, and it wasn't really sensitive enough for those populations, HIV populations, children, etc. And so one of the upgrades that we've been waiting for some time and have just completed a study on is the upgrade to the Ultra cartridge. And the Ultra cartridge basically is called Ultra because the idea was that it's ultra-sensitive. And what we showed in our study was that is, in fact, the case, and that in the important populations, patients with very low bacterial load in their sputum, which include HIV positives, include children, extrapulmonary TB, et cetera, the new assay is shown to be significantly increased sensitivity over the old one. So there's a 17% increase in sensitivity in patients that have low bacterial load. These are patients that would be completely missed by microscopy, which is where most patients are diagnosed, and 12% increase in sensitivity in HIV-positive patients. This comes at a little bit of a cost relative to our study. Our study was a 10-site, 8-country study, and it showed a slight decrease in specificity. So meaning that we can pick up 17% more patients in terms of sensitivity, but it costs us a little bit in terms of false positives. So there's about a 3% decrease in specificity relative to the existing Expert cartridge. The implications of this are how we implement this assay. Essentially, mostly it's going to be about increasing case finding and increasing sensitivity in vulnerable populations, but understanding that as we increase sensitivity, there could be some costs in terms of overdiagnosis. Thank you.
So thank you, Tim. We're going to take questions at the end, so I'm going to have each of the authors present their discussion, and then we'll open it up for questions. So our next speaker is Anani Badji from INSERM in Bordeaux, France, and he's presenting data from the Temprano trial. 6 months of isoniazid preventive therapy reduces mortality independently of antiretroviral therapy in African adults with a high CD4 count.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, everybody. Based on repeated evidence that isoniazid preventive therapy, IPT, decreases the risk of tuberculosis in HIV-infected person, The WHO has consistently recommended since 1993 that HIV-positive persons who are unlikely to have TB should receive at least 6 months of IPT. However, 24 years later, some countries still have not adopted IPT, and in most of those who did, the IPT coverage is low. Most randomized controlled trials of IPT have been performed in the pre-ART era and in patients with low CD4 count. Furthermore, all but one randomized controlled trial have demonstrated the benefits of IPT in terms of reduction of TB, not of mortality. Today, we presented for the first time randomized evidence that IPT decreases mortality in HIV-infected adults with high CD4 count and in the ART era. This evidence comes from the long-term follow-up of patients who participated in the Temprano trial, a trial of early ART and IPT, which short-term results were published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 2015. In the long-term follow-up, we followed 2,056 patients for a mean of 4.6 years per patient. 50% of patients received 6 months of IPT at baseline, and the remaining did not receive IPT. At baseline, 42% of patients had more than 500 CD4 count. They were at very early stage of HIV infection. Our primary analysis leads to three major conclusions. Firstly, IPT led to a 37% reduction of mortality. To our knowledge, this is the first randomized evidence that IPT decreases mortality in HIV-infected adults with high CD4 counts and in the ART era. The only previous randomized trial that showed a mortality reduction with IPT was that conducted by Papp and al. In IT in the late 1980s. It was in the pre-ART era and in patients whose CD4 count was unknown. Secondly, IPT and ART reinforced in each other, with the maximal benefits being reached in the patient who received both, suggesting that receiving both treatment was the better option. Thirdly, our data also shed light on the durability of IPT beneficial effects. In our study, the follow-up time was substantially longer than that in the previous placebo-controlled trial of IPT. And the benefits of 6 month IPT appeared sustainable up to 6 years after the intervention. We conclude that 6 months of IPT has a durable protective effect in reducing all-cause mortality in people with HIV, even in people with high CD4 counts who start antiretroviral therapy. This further emphasizes the benefits of IPT in the ART era in favor of a wider implementation in IPT-related countries such as Côte d'Ivoire, where this trial has been implemented.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Dr. Graham Minkes, who is from University of Cape Town in South Africa and will present conclusions from the randomized controlled trial of prednisone for prevention of paradoxical TB iris.
Thanks, Connie. So just some background first. TB is the commonest co-infection with HIV in sub-Saharan Africa. It's frequent that patients are diagnosed with active TB disease and a first diagnosis of HIV when they enter the clinical services for the first time. And in such patients, we start TB treatment first, followed by the initiation of antiretroviral therapy. Previous clinical trials have demonstrated that in patients with low CD4 counts, starting ART within the first few weeks of TB treatment saves lives. It reduces mortality. But it comes at a cost because it increases the risk for the most common complication of ART initiation in TB patients, which is the TB immune reconstitution inflammatory syndrome, or TB iris for short. And TB iris is a common clinical problem in our setting, where a lot of patients are diagnosed with HIV and then start TB treatment and then ART. And it manifests with recurrence of TB symptoms. A patient's cough returns, their night sweats return, and they might develop enlargement of lymph nodes, lymph glands in the neck, or worsening of their chest X-ray. It seldom results in deaths, but it results in considerable morbidity, and a number of patients need to be hospitalized. Around about a quarter of patients who develop this need to be hospitalized. Currently, there's no preventative medication for TB iris. But we've previously shown in a clinical trial that prednisone, an anti-inflammatory corticosteroid drug used to treat TB iris when patients present with the syndrome, reduces symptoms, symptom duration, and reduces the duration of hospitalization. And in this trial, the PREDAR trial that I presented today, we assessed whether prednisone could be used to prevent TB iris in patients at high risk for developing the condition. So the trial involved 240 participants who were recruited at HIV TB clinics in Khayelitsha Township, just outside Cape Town in South Africa. We focused on patients at high risk for TB iris, people with a CD4 count of less than 100, who were all started on TB treatment and started ART according to guidelines within 30 days of TB treatment. So they all received standard of care in terms of TB treatment, followed by the initiation of antiretroviral therapy, and we randomized half the patients to receive prednisone in addition to the standard of care or to receive placebo. The dose of prednisone that we chose was a moderate dose, and it was started on the same day as antiretroviral therapy in most patients, or up to 48 hours from the initiation of ART. And participants were followed for the development of this condition, TB iris, and to assess the safety of prednisone in these people with advanced HIV disease. So the three major findings of the trial were that we observed a 30% reduction in TB iris in those participants who received prednisone compared to those who received placebo. The incidence of TB iris was 47% in the placebo arm, just showing you how common this condition is in participants, in people with low CD4 counts, and 33% in those in the prednisone arm, so a relative reduction of 30%. There was a trend towards fewer hospitalizations in those who received prednisone, 23% compared to in the placebo arm, 14% in the prednisone arm. But very importantly, there was, unlike other trials that have looked at steroids in patients with HIV infection, there was no evidence of harm associated with steroids in this study. There was no increase in severe infections. There was one case of Kaposi's sarcoma, an HIV-related malignancy that's been observed in other studies to be associated with steroids, but that occurred in the placebo arm. And the implications of our study is that this is the first evidence-based option for reducing the risk of TB iris in high-risk patients with HIV-TB starting ART. Furthermore, prednisone represents a safe, based on our findings, a safe option when it's given at the doses that we gave it and covered by antiretroviral therapy. It's cheap. For the four-week course that we gave, it costs less than $3 a day. And it's accessible in resource-limited settings because it's used for many other indications, such as asthma. One caveat is that we focused our study on certain patients. It didn't apply to all patients with HIV-TB. These were patients who were clinically improving on TB treatment and in whom we had excluded Kaposi's sarcoma at baseline. We excluded patients with hepatitis B infection and patients with rifampicin-resistant TB. So I think careful patient selection is important when potentially rolling out this intervention to prevent TB iris.
Thank you very much to all three of our speakers. I'll open the room up for questions. Let's start with you.
Thank you. Thank you. Michael Smith, MedPage Today. My question is for Dr. Bajra. I think you said the endpoint was all-cause mortality.
Yes.
But surely the effect of isoniazid prophylaxis would really just be to prevent TB. So is the difference in all-cause mortality largely just TB mortality?
Yes.
Why do these people die, in other words?
Yes, for our long-term follow-up, we didn't diagnose morbidity because in the trial, patients were followed under trial condition with free of charge care. But in the long-term follow-up, they didn't have this benefit. They have to pay for the exam. They have to pay for the drugs. So we didn't properly document morbidity. But in the Temprano, the main cause of death was tuberculosis. And we can do the hypothesis that in the long-term follow-up, this was the same main cause of death. It's right that it's true that we didn't have the cause of mortality, the real cause of mortality. We have it for some of morbidity, but not all cause of mortality. We didn't have the mean to.
Okay, just to clarify, over the long term follow up, you know that some patients died and some patients did not, but yes. You don't necessarily know why they died.
Yes, we didn't have all cause of mortality because some of patients died at home, some of patients died, but we didn't have the cause because we didn't did diagnosis for this patient.
Yes, sir.
Ed Sussman, also MedPage, for Dr. Mintes.
Thank you, sir.
Mintes. I'll get it. No, maybe I won't. did you have any fatalities in your group? You said TB iris isn't usually fatal. Did you have any of those fatalities in your study?
Yeah. So the intense follow-up of our trial was for the first 12 weeks of antiretroviral therapy. And remember that these were patients with very advanced HIV, a CD4 count less than 100, where we do expect a certain proportion of deaths. There were 5 deaths in the prednisone arm and 4 in the placebo arm. Obviously not a statistically significant difference. In terms of deaths that were attributed to TB iris, there was one participant in the placebo arm who died of a TB iris event with a pericardial effusion, so accumulation of fluid around the heart that was attributed to TB iris. There were 2 later deaths after 12 weeks that were attributed to TB iris as well. And so that overall, if one looks at the long-term follow-up that we have, there were 3 deaths among 240 participants due to TB iris.
Were all 3 of those in the group?
So one was in the placebo arm and 2 were in the prednisone arm. So no difference in terms of deaths, or even a suggestion of difference in terms of deaths, all-cause deaths or TB iris-related deaths.
Are you now using this protocol in your patients? Have you taken it from your experiment to the clinic?
No, and the reason is the time frame, because we only got the final results just over a month ago. And really, to scale it up for implementation within our primary care HIV TB clinics, we need to engage with the service providers and the health administrators about what the policy implications are. But, our message is going to be that it is an effective intervention, but there needs to be careful patient selection. It's not something that we would advise in all HIV TB patients, but patients that reflect the group of patients that we enrolled.
Have you started using it in your own practice?
No, I haven't seen a patient who fits those criteria. I personally work at a hospital level and not at the clinic level in terms of my clinical practice, so this would not apply to, for instance, hospitalized patients, because that's a different group of patients. These were ambulatory patients in a clinic setting who were improving on TB treatment and then started ART, whereas if you're going to ask me what I do in my clinical practice, it's not the same group of patients that I encounter on a day-to-day basis.
Are there other questions for the speakers? So over here on the end, please.
Keith Alcorn, AIDS Map. This is a question for Dr. Bhaji. The results of the Temprano style trial have been known for several years. Your results today reinforce the message that IPT is beneficial even for people who are taking antiretroviral therapy. What do you see as the major barriers to implementing IPT more widely, because although it's recommended, we know it's still not being used in many settings?
Yes, it's a good question. In fact, we don't very well understand why such intervention with many evidence is not widely implemented. But in our country, I think we need to have strong and clear policy from the authorities to ask for implementation of this intervention. And one of barriers from practitioners is fear of emergence of resistance, and also the difficulty to rule out an active TB without prescribing isoniazid. But I think we can this barrier can be we can find a solution for this barrier. But I think authorities should give clear and strong position for implementation of IPT before and after that. I think we can have a solution for our problem, because we have evidence that there is not higher resistance with IPT when we implement it. And to rule out TB in our trial, in Temprano trial, we implemented the we did the screening with clinical sign, the four clinical sign of WHO plus a systematic chest X-ray, and with also with a clinical exam. With these three tools, we were able to avoid many tuberculosis before initiating isoniazid.
So I think we're going to have to end this portion of the press conference and move on to the next group. So I want to thank you all for your attention and thank the speakers for presenting their work today.